puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
It's time again for Abandoned Manitoba, where we check in with Gordon Goldsboro from the Manitoba Historical Society. How's it going, Gordon? And what are we discussing this week?
It's going great, Keisha. Well, my clue last week might have seemed a little cryptic. I said that our topic, although firmly set here in Manitoba, involves musician Bob Dylan, former Canadian Prime Minister Arthur Meighen, the City of London, England, and the color blue.
I did think that last week. I'm like, ooh, very mysterious. What's this all about? So, Gordon, where do we start?
Well, let's unpack my clue. First, Bob Dylan. Listeners may recall that back in 2008, a surprised Winnipeg resident looked out of his house window and saw Bob Dylan standing in his front yard. Dylan was in town for a concert, and he had gone in search of the boyhood home of fellow musician Neil Young. At the invitation of the homeowner, Dylan came inside, and he, among other things, saw Young's childhood bedroom. So that's the connection to Dylan, but I'm going to skip over Arthur Meighen's relevance to today's discussion until a little bit later.
Okay, I got that part. But what about London and the color blue?
Trust me, these details are connected. Anyone who has visited London, especially if they've done any walking around the city, will recall numerous plaques, most with a vibrant blue background, denoting houses in which noteworthy Londoners have resided at some point in the past. The blue plaque program started in 1866 and is believed to be the oldest of its kind in the world. There are presently over 950 blue plaques all over London. The program is currently administered by an organization called English Heritage, and listeners can find a lot of information about the program at the English Heritage website. Now, this program from London was the inspiration for a similar one initiated by my organization, the Manitoba Historical Society, on Manitoba Day 2010, to initiate blue plaques on the homes of noteworthy Manitobans.
I actually used to live and work in London, England, and I used to love seeing those blue plaques everywhere because it just connected you with history. Now, What does one of the Manitoba blue plaques look like?
Well, unlike the London plaques, which are circular, ours are oval, and they measure about 20 inches wide, about 14 inches tall. They're made of solid metal with raised white letters on an absolutely vivid blue background. The plaques are made to be fastened to a pole in front of the house, or they can be mounted on its exterior walls. The idea being is to put it somewhere where it's visible from the street, so people walking by can see and understand it.
And what's the significance of the blue?
I have no idea. The ones in London are not universally blue, particularly among the older specimens. I suspect blue was chosen because it stands out well against the colors of most building materials. There aren't very many blue-colored houses.
No, there's not. How many houses in Manitoba will be receiving these plaques?
Well, I confess this was not a successful MHS program. Only 10 plaques were ever made, 5 of them for homes in Winnipeg, 5 elsewhere. And of these 10, only 7 or maybe 8 have been installed.
That's unfortunate. 7 or 8, like why not even the whole 10?
Well, a few weeks ago, a 100-plus-year-old house in Portage la Prairie was put up for sale. From 1908 to about 1915, it had been occupied by Manitoba's only prime minister, the Honorable Arthur Meighen. Well, back in 2010, when we started the plaques program, we had contacted the owner to see if he would be receptive to having a plaque on his house. We thought since it is the home or the former home of the only prime minister from Canada, it would make sense to have a plaque on it. Well, he agreed on the condition that the plaque could only be installed after he had completed renovations to the house. Now, we assumed this would be maybe a few months, maybe at most a year. Well, That was 12 years ago.
Oh, man.
As recently as a year ago, the interior work on the house was incomplete. The owner has decided, though, that he wants to travel. And the Meehan house is a continuing draw on his time and his resources. So he's selling it. And we have made tentative arrangements to have the plaque belatedly installed. You know, and there are similar problems at other houses. And we'll talk about those in just a moment.
Well, what other houses outside Winnipeg have received a plaque?
Well, one plaque that remains uninstalled was for a house near Homewood that had belonged to early Manitoba Premier Rodmond Roblin. He's the grandfather of Duff Roblin, also a premier. Another uninstalled plaque was for novelist Frederick Philip Grove at Rapid City. Two plaques that have been installed were for the First World War aviator Alan MacLeod at Stonewall and for the Kenton House at McCreary.
And let me know some of the plaques here in Winnipeg.
Well, there's a plaque on the Crescentwood house that was once occupied by the founders of the Royal Winnipeg Ballet, Betty Farrelly and Gwyneth Lloyd. There's one on the St. James House of Manitoba's member of the Group of Seven painters, Lionel Lemoyne Fitzgerald. A plaque marks the Wolseley House of Nellie McClung, the Point Douglas House of nursing pioneer Margaret Scott, and the St. Boniface House of nun Alma Lorando. A list of all 10 houses with links to more information on each one is on the MHS website. The address is mhs.ca/homes.
And, you know, Gordon, you had alluded earlier to some problems when putting up these plaques. What are they?
Well, there's numerous problems. First, we wanted the plaques to be durable, but because each plaque is unique, of course, it has unique letters on it, there are few economies of scale in the manufacturing process. You know, when you make lots that are exactly the same, then it becomes cheap. When each of them is different, it's not so cheap. So the per plaque cost was relatively high. The second problem is that given this high cost, we didn't have the means to produce lots of plaques. We had to therefore be very judicious in choosing the recipients for these plaques. And so even though some might like to see a plaque on Neil Young's house, for example, we followed the lead of the London Blue Plaques, which require a person to have been deceased at least 20 years before a plaque can go up. The idea is that there needs to be sufficient hindsight to evaluate their suitability for a plaque. The third problem is that finding the address and the years of occupation by noteworthy people, especially for rural houses, is really difficult. You know, and frankly, the dates given on some of our plaques are known to be wrong based on more recent research. And when we made the plaques in the first place, we thought we were right. So, for example, the dates on the Meehan plaque are one example. You know, even now, we're not entirely certain how long Arthur Meehan owned his house in Portage, even if he didn't live in it while politicking in Ontario. Four is we have found quite often that the present occupant simply doesn't want a plaque because of the possibility of greater public scrutiny of their house. You know, some people don't like the thought of having music groupies hanging around. The London program found that a plaque for communist leader Karl Marx, who, yes, did live in London for a while, it was routinely vandalized. So after replacing it a couple of times, they just gave up. There's no more plaque for Karl Marx. A fifth and final reason is that, well, there is a question of who maintains these plaques long term. You know, who's responsible if they get damaged or if they get stolen to replace them? You know, that could be another significant financial burden. You know, the MHS has limited means. And so taking all of these things together, we just abandoned the program, frankly, after just a few years. And given the problems we encountered, I don't foresee any new initiative to restart a program to mark the homes of noteworthy Manitobans, even though I think it's a nice idea. But there is an alternative that, at least to me, makes the idea much more feasible.
Do tell. What is that?
Well, for about the last 10 years, since our plaque program kind of petered out, I've been compiling lists of addresses, mostly in Winnipeg, where noteworthy people once lived. And I make these lists freely available on our website. It's organized by street name. So basically, you go to a particular street and it lists number by number who lived at those places at some point in the past. Now, I do warn listeners that the lists are not at all comprehensive. But on the other hand, if there is a volunteer out there who wanted to take on the task of greatly expanding the lists, well, we would be pretty glad to have the help. But, you know, even in their present limited form, they do give a taste of the history that one can encounter on a walk along many city streets. So if anybody wants to check out the present lists of addresses for memorable people, go to our website, mhs.ca/addresses.
Well, thanks so much for giving us that information and also the volunteer opportunity. Now, I'm wondering if you can give us a hint about next week's episode.
Well, the first village in Manitoba that was settled by Jewish farmers, now long abandoned, is widely believed to have been a place called Bender Hamlet in the Interlake. But it turns out there was another settlement that preceded Bender Hamlet by several years. Next week, we'll visit the ghost town of Gruber.
Ooh, very much looking forward to that. Thank you again, Gordon.
You're welcome. Talk next week. Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Gordon Goldsborough was just with us with fascinating stories about lost and forgotten places right here in our province of Manitoba. And you can see all the photos of the abandoned places that Gordon talks about each weekend on the Manitoba Historical Society website, mhs.ca. Very easy. And to see those pictures, just click on quick links at the top left-hand corner. And if you have any information for Gordon, including updates on the things that we talk about on the show, all you have to do is reach him at 204-474-7469, or you can just go ahead and email us at weekend@cbc.ca.